Planting a cover crop in your garden sounds like a wonderful idea, but for some of us, making it happen is a challenge. Today on Horticulture Day, we are going organic. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett is here. We'll talk cover crops for the garden, organic fertilizers and soil amendments, and we'll find out how to grow organic sweet corn. ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran will also be here, and he and Kathleen will answer your questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and this hour we are going organic. Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett is here. Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Very good. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
And I want to mention that the 15th Annual Iowa Organic Conference is coming up November 22nd and 23rd. We're going to talk with some of the folks that are going to be coming to the conference on a future Talk of Iowa. I know this is something you're very involved in planning. So if people want to sign up to go, now is the time to do that, right?
Absolutely. The deadline for early registration is next week, November 7th. It's $95 right now. After that time, it'll go up to $115. So get your registration in. All you have to do is Google Iowa Organic Conference 2015, and you'll be taken to the website for registration. It's co-hosted by Iowa State and University of Iowa Office of Sustainability, and we have a great lineup this year.
All right. Well, let's talk about cover crops, because we are seeing more cover crops in the fields. A lot of people want to try this out in their garden. For some of us, it can be a little bit intimidating. But when we talk about a cover crop, what is the purpose of it?
Right. Well, it's pretty simple. It covers the soil. That's the general definition of a cover crop. And of course, within that, there are many, many kinds of cover crops, but they're basically broken down to three types: grass cover crops, legume cover crops, that is types like clover, lupins, we can't really grow them too well here, but crops that fix nitrogen are legumes. And then the third is just forbs, such as turnips, radish, brassica family. So depending on what you want, you can pick or mix those three types of cover crops.
All right. And you mentioned the purpose is to cover the soil, so that prevents erosion. But also, you also mentioned nitrogen fixing. So this is something that can actually enhance your soil. How does that work?
Right. Yeah, it's all of them are multi-purpose. So the main purpose, I always tell people, is for improving soil quality. And we've been doing research on that since 2005. We've been looking at the benefits of cover crops in our research plots. And I can talk a little bit about that in a minute. But in general, yeah, you're adding them to create more nitrogen for your future crop in the spring or summer. Or you are adding carbon to the soil, which is beneficial to your future commercial crops too. You're preventing erosion, as you mentioned, by having that cover on there. It'll slow down water. You can also help with nitrate leaching and groundwater pollution by having a cover crop there, which actually can take up the excess nitrogen on your site. And there's just so many benefits of cover crops. They can, in certain instances, reduce insect problems, depending on the cover crop. And in general, since you're doing organic, you don't have to worry about it reducing herbicide costs, although conventional farmers can use it for that purpose. But in organic, what we're looking at is organic no-till, where you crush the cover crop and leave it as a dead, decaying mulch through the whole season, and that helps prevent weeds and cut your weed management costs.
All right. Well, let's talk nuts and bolts. And well, I guess, first of all, when you decide you want a cover crop, where do you turn to figure out what you want? What are the resources you should look into?
Well, fortunately, there's a lot on the web right now. It's amazing how much cover crops have resurged recently. And a lot of that has to do with government support, because you can get cost share from the NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service.
If you're a farmer, so
if
you
you're
have
a farmer,
not just your little garden plot,
that's
but something bigger, right?
Right. But for your little garden plot, it won't cost that much to get cover crop seed.
Right.
But I think that's why you're seeing more cover crops on the land, and there's more emphasis on protecting the groundwater in Iowa, with especially with the Des Moines Water Works lawsuit that's going on. So if you're a gardener, you probably want to add both legumes and grasses to your as a cover crop, because you want to add both nitrogen through the legumes and have that grass crop there to provide the most cover. The grasses will sprout the fastest. They'll grow the longest, provide the most biomass, which will give you the most carbon. But the legumes are the ones that, like clover, or my favorites are red clover, white clover. I'm trying to think if there's any other. And hairy vetch is what we use in our research plots. They'll provide nitrogen. But the best is if you mix them. So we always mix our hairy vetch with rye. And that's cereal rye. It's the rye that produces a head that you can harvest, and it's a grain. You don't let it get to that stage, but because there's another rye that a lot of people get confused with, and that's rye grass. It's one word, rye grass. It's primarily used, for example, in New Zealand. They use it for pastures there. It doesn't overwinter very well here in Iowa. So folks use it in their lawns, but in a mix. But it's, as a cover crop in your garden, I wouldn't recommend it. My favorites are cereal rye, white clover, red clover, or hairy vetch.
All right. And where do you get the seeds? I realize if you're planting a big field, you have other resources. But if I have a little garden plot, where do I find the seeds?
Right. And it's really interesting, because when we talked about doing the show, I started Googling around looking for it. Because since I do large-scale commercial ag research, I get mine from a huge warehouse in Minnesota called Albert Lee Seed House. So they will sell retail, and you can get from them. They're a great source. But then I saw locally, it's amazing how many farm and garden stores now are carrying cover crop seeds, which is really great. So Earl May, for example, has red clover, and I think they might have rye. And they also had buckwheat, which I haven't talked about yet. That's another good summer cover crop.
So the supply is following the demand.
I think so.
Good. When do you plant it?
Right. And it depends on what the cover crop is. As I was just talking about, buckwheat, which is really good for pulling up phosphorus from the soil, it's a summer cover crop. So you have to plant it from May till August, and it's going to die in the winter.
All right. And so it grows in conjunction with whatever else you're growing in the garden?
Exactly. And a lot of folks use it just for building soils, and also it brings in a lot of beneficial insects. It has a lot of pollen and nectar that is really attractive to beneficial insects. So it's a good cover crop for that. You can try to what's called intercrop it, put a row of vegetables, then put a row of buckwheat. It's pretty competitive, though. Mm. We did some research on that, and it's best to put it in its own separate patch, I think. And with all these cover crops, like buckwheat, hairy vetch, you do have to be aware that they can persist, i.e. they can drop their seeds and then continue growing. So some people say, oh, once you plant it, you'll never get rid of it. But if it has a beneficial purpose, I don't really consider it a pest. And
right.
They're easy to pull up and kill if you get sick of looking at buckwheat after a while.
Okay, so depending on what you pick, the time that you plant it varies. I mean, are there some that once you've gone through your garden growing season, then you plant the cover crop?
Right, exactly. And that's probably the most common. They call them winter annuals. For example, we just tilled our garden, and I took the last of the tomatoes out. I just had to pull them out, which was hard to do. It's the longest season ever this year for tomatoes in the garden. But they were just hanging on and not really turning, just staying green. So
a little bit of promise, but
right. And so we had some fried green tomatoes last weekend, and then we tilled the soil and planted our winter rye cover crop. And as I said, you can get the seed locally. Brecky's in Ames carries seed, for example. There's probably some here in Iowa City, too. And just use a grass seed spreader, spread it out on the garden. You can till it in a little bit. You can walk on it. Commercially, they will, or larger scale, they'll use cultipackers to push it so you have good seed to soil contact. That'll really help it sprout and get going. So we just planted rye, but at our plots at the research farm in Greenfield, we planted a combination of hairy vetch and rye. And they'll both overwinter. They'll sprout now. You can plant them actually up till November 15th.
Really? Wow. Okay.
And they'll sprout and start going in before the snow hits. Even in the snow, you can dig down and see they're still green, which is really nice to see in the winter. And then once spring kicks in, once it gets 50 degrees or more, they'll take off. And then depending on what you want to do with them in the spring, you can till them under. That's the most common. Or you can do what we're looking at now called organic no-till, where you wait till they're pretty high when the seed heads are just starting to form and crush them with a roller crimper. Now, we have a commercial one, but I've seen gardeners use homemade ones and just keep it out there as this crush mulch throughout the season, and then you can plant your vegetables right into that.
Do you have to do something to maintain that? I know, for example, with many weeds in my life, you can crush them, but they will come right back. With the cover crops, do you have to continue to crush or do a maintenance?
Well, if you do it ideally, it's called a one-pass system. Rodale out in Pennsylvania developed it. And that's why you have to wait until that proper stage, which is actually called anthesis, when the heads on the rye, for example, are shedding their pollen. At that point, they're ready to die if you crush them. If you do it before that, yeah, they'll just think you're messing around with them and pop right back up. So you want to wait till anthesis or when you see there's head, the seeds are starting to form in the heads, and then roll it, crush it. Okay. And you have to have a lot of weight, too, on your roller. Just walking on it won't do it.
So this sounds like a great option if you're trying to claim a plot of land that has quite a weed seed bank in it already, because you can outcompete the weeds and then crowd them out.
Excellent. Yes, that's definitely another good reason to have cover crops. It's actually the reason why organic gardeners and farmers have more than two crops in their rotation. It's required to have a crop rotation in organic, and basically they say minimum three crops. So that third crop can be a cover crop. Commercially, you're looking at oats or wheat or something to break that cycle, which is actually a cover crop. It's covering the whole soil. The tillers are across the field.
But you can still harvest it.
And you can still harvest it. That's the difference with what I found out when I came from California to Iowa was Iowans harvest their cover crops.
Is there a liability to harvesting your cover crop?
Nope.
Okay.
It's perfectly fine because it does its work ahead of time.
Just using the whole animal, right?
Exactly. Nothing's wasted. The other thing I found out was we have borders between conventional and organic fields. They're harvested in Iowa. In California, they're just mowed and left.
Interesting. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett is here. We've been talking about cover crops. We're also going to talk about organic fertilizers. We'll talk about growing organic sweet corn. And you can ask your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're focusing on organic practices this hour. With me, Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett. Richard Geron is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And, of course, you can join the conversation. We have more to talk about, but we'd also love to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR. Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've talked a lot about cover crops. Now, I do want to talk about organic fertilizer because, of course, a lot of people want to amend their soil or need to amend their soil and are looking for ways to do it. So where do you get started with organic fertilizer? I understand cover crops help.
Right.
But what are other alternatives?
And I think it's good we're talking about both together because, in the end, we use both in all our vegetable fields or vegetable research plots. You can get a tremendous amount of fertilization, nitrogen and carbon and other micronutrients from cover crops. But if you want to get maximum yields, you need to add some kind of manure fertilization in general. So Our website, Iowa State Organic Program, has a lot of information about organic fertilization and soil, building soil quality and organic systems, but there's also a lot on the web on organic fertilizers. And in general, they'll be manure-based because manure will have the highest amount of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium in it. You can get what's called vegetarian organic fertilizers, that, i.e. they don't come from animals. The entire product comes from, for example, alfalfa meal. But they're more expensive, so most folks...
There's a lot of manure out there.
Right. And that's the best thing about Iowa is you can, in general, find free or cheap manure compared to California. Everything's going to be compared to California today. Where you can spend $300 an acre for manure. So
now, of course, in the garden store, we can buy bags of composted manure. But you don't need to go with composted manure, right?
Composting is better.
Okay.
Anything that's composted will be a more stable form of nutrients and also will do a lot to decrease the smell. Yes, getting the raw manure is okay, but you need to till it in and try to get it to start mineralizing right away and getting rid of some of that smell. We don't take any manure that's – it has to be – for us, it's about at least a year old.
Okay.
Before we will – take it to the research farm, and then we'll still turn it and apply it. We generally apply in March when the soils again are starting to warm up, so the mineralization will kick in right away. The microbes will start working on that manure. If it's composted, you could wait even longer, but I would recommend that you would put it on at least 2 to 4 weeks before you're planting your vegetables. Because you want it broken down somewhere,
right.
Even if it's composted.
Because it can make you sick.
Well, I don't know about that because we've looked at a lot of manures and we haven't found any dangerous pathogens in them. But there's always that potential and you just don't want to have your hand when you're planting sticking your hand into, for example, on decomposed manure.
All right. Well, and are there are guidelines as far as how long you need to wait – after, especially if you're selling your product, so, after applying manure. So give me a ballpark there.
Right. If you're going for certified organic production, you're using raw manure, it has to be put on 120 days ahead of harvest. So that's a big constraint for folks that want to do multiple crops. If you're doing field crops, it's easy. You put it on in March, you don't harvest till October, November. No problem there, which is basically what we do. So for our vegetables, we only use composted manure and we'll also purchase organic fertilizers. And the thing about organic fertilizers, the easiest one, the cheapest one is just getting regular old composted manure in a bag from the farm and garden shop. There are what I call fancier organic fertilizers. You're going to pay a little more money for them because they are sterilized, sanitized, pelletized, more processing to them.
Less like manure.
Exactly.
Now, of course, a lot of people do have backyard chickens or know people who have backyard chickens. So let's say you're making your own manure at home. What do you need to think about with that? If you're cleaning out the chicken coop, can you just throw that in the garden?
You could, but again, you would want to wait. So, you know, if you're not selling it as certified organic, there's no regulations on it. However, you definitely want to wait for sanitation purposes. So I would say, again, minimum 6 weeks. If you're going to put it on just straight from the cage, mix it in, wait 6 weeks before you plant anything into it. The best would be to make your own compost pile. So then you could add other things to it, kitchen scraps and lawn clippings, mix that all in with your cage droppings as it is, and create a really good fertilizer on your own. But you need to turn it. The more you turn it, the more oxygen you get in there to feed the microbes to break it down. So,
And a compost pile that's actually working needs to maintain a fairly high temperature within the compost pile, right?
Exactly. So
a lot of us have piles. I think maybe not all of us have piles that are actually doing what they're supposed to do.
Right. The minimum is 3 by 3 by 3 cubic feet to have the right size to start it cooking. You can also buy, I think ours is called Earth Machine, plastic composters you can throw your stuff into and seal it up. But it has vents, so it heats up enough to help break it down. But yeah, you want to make sure it's pretty much broken down before you apply it to your crops.
Now, we do see farmers out in the fields applying manure to their fields in the fall. It sounds like you prefer a spring application. Why is that?
I'm from the school that you want to get every bit of nitrogen out of your manure as possible. So, yes, you can apply it in the fall. It's easier to apply it in the fall. Once you're done harvesting, what else is there to do but spread manure? So that's why you see and smell a lot of it going on these days. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just if you wait till spring, you'll be able to retain a lot more nutrients.
And how often, we're talking about home gardeners now, how often would you fertilize? Would you do that every year?
Again, I'm sure Richard's going to be saying, tell them to test their soil. It depends on your soils. So you would definitely need to take a soil sample. I mean, we recommend it. Take it into the local extension office. Get your soil tested. It's not that expensive. And you'll get a complete breakdown and analysis of how much you should put on. In general, you're going to need nitrogen every year for maximum crops. There are gardeners and farmers, well, mostly market gardeners, that only put on composted manure every 5 years, and their crops are fine. So it depends on your soil. It depends on the history of the site. It depends if you've been using cover crops, all these things.
Well, and Richard, are you saying you should get your soil tested? Is she right?
Well, occasionally, yes. It doesn't have to be done every year, but I would probably say maybe every third or fourth year.
And tell me, you get a lot of phone calls to the Hortline and emails to the Hortline asking questions about organic fertilizers. Are there any issues that I've missed? What are some of the common things that you get asked about?
Well, I guess the main thing would be they're actually quite available. You can find them at a garden center, a home and farm store. They're pretty readily available. And if you want to apply something, for example, like just nitrogen, you can apply blood meal. That's widely available. It's strictly nitrogen. You're not adding phosphate or potash, and you can do that. It's a slow-release material, and it's fairly safe.
All right. And we are talking about organic practices this hour, but of course we're here to answer your questions about the plants in your life. You can talk with Kathleen Dellett, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Specialists. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We do have a cover crop question for you here from Jim. What are the pros and cons of oats as a cover crop? Oats are cheap at the local co-op, he says.
Exactly. Yeah, oats are great. And it's funny because we always plant rye, but this year my co-PI, Cindy Cavardella, soil scientist at USDA, said, I want to try oats this year. Fine. Oats are great. They're cheap, as you mentioned. They'll germinate rapidly. They'll create a nice cover out there. There's only one problem. They die in the winter. Now, it's not that big a deal because they form if they've grown up enough, they'll form a nice mulch layer, dead mulch layer, but they won't give you as much nutrition and cover as the rye, cereal rye, because that continues to live through the winter and, as I mentioned, takes off astronomically in the spring once the soils warm up.
But then you don't have to terminate the oats. I could see that being a benefit for some people.
True, especially for gardeners, because you could probably just push that dead mulch away and plant into it. Farmers still will have to till it under, though.
Okay.
It forms that thick of a mulch, and the roots are pretty massive, too.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number for you to call with your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Ellen is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a raised bed that I did with a soilless mix, and I have an infusion of slugs, so I need to know how to get rid of those organically and the best method and the best time to try that.
Slugs.
Yeah. Kathleen?
As bad as they seem here, they're nothing compared to California. The University of California, Santa Cruz.
So you should just feel lucky, right, Ellen, I guess. Right?
Start by thinking relatively, because the University of California, Santa Cruz, their mascot is a slug. It's because it rains so much there. But you're right. Occasionally we get them here, and it's generally when it's cool and rainy, just like Santa Cruz weather. And believe it or not, I still abide by the old pan of beer in the garden. They're attractive to beer. They will crawl in it and they will enjoy their death as they're sipping away.
Now you don't have empirical evidence for that. But no, it makes you feel better.
Exactly. There's also copper strips you can buy that we've tried in our garden that you can put around your beds and hopefully get them in there before the slugs start marching towards your bed. I don't know, Richard, you got anything else out there?
Well, there are slug baits that you can buy.
I don't know if there's any organic ones.
Well, there is. Okay. There's metaldehyde, which is a chemical, but there's also an organic one. The key to those is to apply those early in the spring, basically maybe late April, early May, and prevent that buildup of the slug population. If you wait until a population has built to a certain level, it's too late. So you need to put it on early, typically late April, early May.
And does the pan of beer really work?
It does, but it can be kind of it's difficult to get the population down by that method. The baits tend to be more effective, and they can control a bigger population.
All right. And Kathleen, if you're gardening organically, does it have to be a craft beer?
Depends on how discerning your slugs are in their connoisseurs.
All right. Ellen, thanks a lot for your call. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Yep. 866-780-9100. Wendy is up next in Iowa City. Hi, Wendy.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a composting question. I started composting a good year ago, and I've harvested two batches. When I put it on my flower beds and garden beds, it seems like when I come back to it about a month later and I kind of dig in, it feels kind of crusty and crunchy. Mm-hmm. And that just seems very odd to me. And I just wonder, am I doing something wrong or is it heavier on greens or brown? You know, I don't know. Do you know anything about that?
Well, What are your feedstocks, as they call them? What are you putting into the compost to make the compost?
Leaves, straw, and a lot of kitchen greens.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and water and air.
Mm-hmm. And are you turning it often so that the microbes are breaking down?
Yeah. I mean, as much as I can, like throughout the winter. You know, it gets harder to do in the winter here.
Right. Although just sidebar, I don't compost in the winter either, but I know people that do in their garage and their basements. So if you can handle the smell as it's breaking down. But I don't think it's anything to worry about. I would continue. If I see something like that, I would work it into the soil. I would water. I would, make sure that it's breaking down. It could be. It sounds like you have a lot of carbon there with the leaves and the straw. So
right. You might want to add some grass clippings, which is high in nitrogen. So if you have a bagger, you could bag your lawn clippings and put those in there, and that might kind of balance it out better.
Okay. Because, I mean, it's supposed to be soft, right? Not real crispy.
Right.
Right. When it's properly composted, it's going to be very soft. And it's basically almost going to look like soil somewhat.
Yeah, and it does when I put it down, but then, like I say, like a month later, it just gets real crusty. Anyway, okay, well, thank you. I'll try that.
All right, Wendy, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Lauren in Des Moines. Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I live in the city. I am not a big farmer. We have some herbs. We have flowers. But we have house rabbits. And the base for their litter, they're litter-trained rabbits. The base for their litter is a product called Yesterday's News, which is recycled newspaper pellets, and then they use the litter pan. And I have always just tossed that to go into the landfill, but I'm wondering in the spring if I could use that, if that would be the right mixture to put into flower beds and before I plant my container gardens to use manureize the soil.
Right. Kathleen?
Yeah. I would advocate composting it. I would never put it on directly.
Okay.
Because the two things, you don't know exactly what it's going to do, and it always helps to break it down a little and stabilize it. The only concern I have, I don't know this product, the newspaper product, if it has any lead in it.
Okay.
Now, most newspapers have moved away from lead-based ink, but I would definitely check that out because you wouldn't want to add that to your garden.
No.
No, we wouldn't.
Well, and if she's got – okay, let's say the newspapers don't have lead and she's got rabbit droppings, what else would she need to mix into that to have a good compost mixture?
Yeah, I would go to the – I would use your grass clippings, as Richard mentioned, and you could go to your local farm and garden store and buy a bale of hay. They're not that expensive. And mix that in, too. That would make a good compost.
And actually, there is hay – because when I clean out their cage, there's all their Timothy hay that's on the bottom of the cage that I throw in.
Perfect. There you go.
All right. Maybe we've started a new trend, and you could start a whole new business enterprise, Lauren.
Well, I think so.
You need more rabbits, probably. But...
I may need more rabbits. My husband would not agree with that. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. I've got a question I think we can sneak in before the break. Richard, this is from Jason. Is it too late to spread grass seed this year, and when should I spread seed in the spring?
Well, it's too late as far as getting it to come up and germinate this fall. So they could try a dormant seeding around mid to late November where they apply that. And the theory with that is that if you apply that, the freezing and thawing of the soil will work the seed into the soil, and then it hopefully will germinate in the spring. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. The next best time would be basically mid to late April of the next spring.
All right. We're going to take a short break. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and organic specialist Kathleen Dellett. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we have the opportunity to ask a lot of questions about organic gardening today. We have Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett here. Also, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron is here. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up, we've got Joe in Parkersburg. Hi, Joe.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a question. We have a smallish garden. We converted it all to raised beds last year, and it did amazingly well. And now we've got a bunch of tomatoes and peppers and other vegetables that are going to die here. I'm wondering if all of that biomass, if I should remove it from the raised beds and compost it separately, or can I just kind of chop it up in place and work it into those raised beds? I'm kind of curious about the disease problems.
Well, one thing to consider would be, are those plants diseased? And if you have like a blight on your tomato plants, I would be inclined to pull those and probably not compost them. Because in the average compost pile at home, the temperatures don't get high enough to actually destroy the pathogens. Otherwise, if you have plant material that's basically healthy, you could remove it from the area and put it in a compost pile.
Okay, thank you.
You could also till it in. I mean, commercially, that's what they do. They don't pull anything out. So tilling really helps, even if there's a little bit of microbes there on your leaves. It'll help break it down quickly. I don't know how big your beds are, though, if you want to take a tiller in there and disturb them. That's the big issue. We actually broke our beds all down last week before we tilled. So it's your choice on that.
Depends on the size, I'm sure, if you're trying to move tiller from bed to bed.
Exactly.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Yep. 866-780-9100. Jeff is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, as far as nitrogen and crop spreading that on in the spring, I think it's better just to wait and let it mellow there because who knows? I think the nitrogen is best for soybeans particularly and that's in the spring is when they're going to really need them. I have a question for Richard about a aging old bur oak that is diseased, and I have saved some acorns, and they were volunteers on my lawn. And can I dig those up? Do they have a long tap root like a dandelion, or can I just dig that up and put them in pots and and then save them?
Well, they do have tap roots when they're young. As far as trying to save them, I would leave them in the ground at this point. If you want to dig them up and put them in a pot, I would do that early next spring before they leaf out. Another option might be to go ahead and maybe dig them up and put them at one end of the garden and maybe care for them for maybe a year or two and then transplant them to your permanent site. But they do have a taproot, but if you dig them up when they're small, you should be okay.
All right, and if he wants to dig them up in the spring, it's probably a good idea to stick a little flag in right next to them at this point, wouldn't it?
Right.
So he actually knows where they are in the spring if
they're
little.
Where they are, but they should be easy to find, I would think. The other concern would be you might possibly want to put some wire fencing around them this fall so the rabbits don't browse on them this winter. So you could use something like chicken wire or hardware cloth.
All right. Jeff, thanks a lot for your call. Tana is on the line in Mason City. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, it's another compost question. Is there a formula that I should use when potting plants in the spring? How much compost compared to potting soil I should use?
Well, in a pot, I would typically just use a commercial potting soil. Now, if you want to make your own, I would probably use maybe two parts garden soil and one part compost, something of that nature.
Okay.
I would caution, though, that you – is this homemade compost or is this commercial?
Yes, we have a compost bin.
Yeah, I would caution, again, to get it tested. You can send a sample into Iowa State because if it turns out it's really rich in nitrogen, that two parts to one could actually burn your plant. So you got to make sure. I mean, I would think you'd want to have it more like 4-to-1 just
four
in case. Four
okay.
parts soil to one part compost.
Okay.
Just to avoid
and
that
concern.
And
kind of use that as a general guideline and working it into my garden beds as well.
And though in the gardens with vegetables, you could go a little higher. Just in a pot, it's so much more condensed and you don't have that much space. So, again, if you can get it tested, I would check it out. Check out the percent of nitrogen that's in your compost and you could just shoot us a call or let us, you know, send us an email and we can guide you further after that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Bob in Muscatine. Hi, Bob.
Yeah. My wife's sister lives in Korea, and she suggested that we let our Swiss chard winter over. And I suggested that we're about 5 degrees of latitude north of that, and maybe that might not work. What do you think? Do you think it'll winter over and sprout in spring?
I would think not. Not in Iowa, no.
Depends on global warming. There was a student in my class that asked me about kale, and I said, no way. Well, guess what? It lived. I don't know if it was that last year or the year before. So do you think Swiss chard's more sensitive than kale, though, Richard?
I would think so, yes. If we get a typical Iowa winter, I think there's very little chance that plant will survive in Iowa.
Okay. Well, I'll break the news. We'll probably end up trying it, but I'll break
right.
the news.
Okay.
You don't have much to lose by trying it, right?
And put some kale in there, too.
I don't.
All right, Bob. Thanks a lot for your call. We've got Joanne on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I have a question about worm compost. I've had a worm compost bin for a couple of years now, so I have a fair amount of it. And I'm wondering if I can just add it to the raised beds and turn it in, or if it's better when I plant in the spring to actually add it to the planting hole where I'm putting my tomatoes and peppers and such.
I would say both. Go ahead, Richard.
I would be inclined to apply it to the whole bed area to make it uniform. That'd be my suggestion.
And how much per, like, square foot?
Oh, that's hard to say. I guess maybe like an inch or so I would just work into the hole.
Do you have so much that I was going to say? Do you want to just spread it out over the garden and use what you have? Or
I have a fair amount because I have, you know, after 5 years I have a lot of worms, so they go through things pretty quickly.
So would you have like an inch to spread over the entire area?
Probably.
Then I would basically do that and work it in.
Okay. And can I do it this fall, or would it be better to do it in the spring?
I think spring. I'd prefer spring.
All right. And Kathleen, you said both. So should she spread it over the whole garden and add some to the hole when she's digging?
Right. Well, I'm with Richard, or maybe you said it, Charity, that do you really have that much? I mean, it's expensive to buy worm compost. That's why I didn't even mention it.
At this point, I have about a 5-gallon bucket, so.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you're going to make an inch across the whole garden then with a 5-gallon
bucket. Depends on the size of the garden.
Yeah, I have raised beds, so they're pretty concentrated areas where I plant.
I would say either way is fine. Just make sure that if you put it in the hole, you're working it in really well so you're not planting the roots straight into the worm compost.
All right, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. We still have time for a couple more calls, 866-780-9100. Here's a couple questions from Gina. We generally just have a salsa and herb garden in raised beds. We use one bed for peppers and two for tomatoes and one for herbs. Last year, we put black garden mesh over the beds to help with – or mesh, I think is what it's supposed to say. Black garden mesh over the beds to help with the weeds. Should the mesh be pulled up for winter is her first question.
I would, yes.
Okay. And then she says, should we rotate the crops between the beds? Also, I heard you talking about planting oats or rye. Will the oats and rye sprout in the spring? So to review on that one, but first rotation between the
definitely.
Beds.
Now, keep in mind that tomatoes and peppers are in the same family, so that's you want to get them at a different location.
All right, so that could be problematic.
Could be, yes.
All right, and that's a problem because the different pathogens can persist from year to year, and then you wind up with a lot of them.
Right, and they can get the same thing. A blight that may affect tomatoes could also affect peppers, so you want to get them out of there and something else in. The herbs would be fine, but it needs to be something entirely different, some other plant family.
All right. And Kathleen, reviewing with cover crops, oats die in the winter. She said, would the oats or rye sprout in the spring?
Right. You can do spring planting. Okay. Oats, if you're going to pick between the two, I would do oats in the spring. I mean, rye will sprout, but oats will do a lot better.
Okay. And then you would have to terminate that crop.
Right. I mean, you could theoretically leave it all season, but most people don't want to do that. They want to get the carbon and mix it right in the soil before they plant their vegetables.
Want to garden in their garden, right?
Not just harvest oat grouts.
Right. All right. Here's a question from Matthew. We have a small raised bed of herbs and intend to have more beds next year. We try not to waste much and wanted to know if tea leaves and coffee grounds are okay to incorporate directly into the beds.
I would prefer to add those to a compost pile again rather than put them directly into the garden.
Okay. I know this is something, this is a practice that has gone on for a long time. Does it damage them?
No. And there was a woman, Ruth Stout, she had this method called sheet composting. And I think that's where it started because my mother and her do it too, where you just go and dump it in the garden and it'll break down. It's just, as Richard and I are saying, adding it to a compost pile, letting it mix with all the products that are the feedstocks that are in your compost, you'll have a much more stable, uniform, nutritious product.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Next up, we have Pat in Eldridge. Hi, Pat.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Can you tell me when a person should cut their asparagus down and raspberries also?
Okay. Well, as far as cutting down the asparagus foliage, you could cut it down once it's been destroyed by a hard frost or freeze, so when it turns brown. But we normally suggest leaving it over winter. And the reason for that would be that that dead debris will catch snow, and that insulates the ground, keeps the asparagus crowns warmer, and also catches the snow so that when it melts, it provides water. So we typically suggest doing it late March, early April, before the spears start to emerge.
All right. Just cut it to the ground.
And then at that point, let's say late March, go out there, early April, take your pruning shears and cut it right down to the ground.
Okay. And then how about raspberries?
Well, the raspberries, it kind of depends upon the type that they are. We typically do no pruning of raspberries in the fall. It's typically done in the spring. if you have the typical red raspberry that bears fruit in early to midsummer, we suggest going out in late March, early April, and remove the very small spindly canes because they're not going to produce anything anyway. Leave the bigger, fatter canes, and then maybe cut off the upper one-fourth of that cane, and you're basically done. Now, if you have a fall-bearing red raspberry, what most people do is they cut them right down to the ground. And they'll come back, and those new canes will produce a nice crop in late summer, early fall. If you have a purple or black, typically, basically, you want to, again, remove the small spindly canes and cut out any dead wood that may have occurred during the wintertime.
All right, Pat, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Pam in Bettendorf. Hi, Pam.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Oh, I was just going to respond to the kale comment. The person that called in and talked about their kale and was advised to, you know, it would not survive the winter. And I've had a couple kale that maybe there's biennial kale, but I took all the leaves off because I didn't want to waste it. And it was in a spot that I didn't have to worry about, you know, digging it up. So I just left the roots in out of curiosity, and it came back in the spring.
Well, we were talking about Swiss chard not making it through the winter, but kale.
I misunderstood.
No, that's all right. Kathleen, kale does seem to be able to do this.
Right. I thought it couldn't, but the student dared me to watch and see that, in fact, I think when was it warmer, Richard? Last winter or winter before?
The winter before was really, really difficult, so must have been last winter.
Okay.
I could see where kale, it is a cool season crop, and if we have good snow cover and a mild winter, I could see where it would basically overwinter. It would tend to have difficulty if we have very little snow cover and very cold temperatures.
All right, and so the benefit of that is that you could start harvesting again in the spring?
Exactly.
All right. So, and you have very little to lose by trying it, right?
That's right.
Because you either pull it out now or you pull it out then, right?
Right. And a lot of even homeowners are going to creating little greenhouses, even just making a small structure with pieces of wood and plastic can really help overwinter those greens.
This is a question from Susan for you, Richard. When should I dig up my geraniums to bring them in and put in a paper bag over?
Well, before that first frost or freeze, definitely. So I would do that as soon as possible if you haven't done that.
All right, and there was frost on the ground this morning.
Yes, but geraniums are, they can tolerate a light frost pretty well, so I think they should be okay. But I would just dig them up. I tend to remove the flowers, take those off, shake off all the dirt, and then put one or two in a large paper bag, like a grocery bag. And then you need to store them in a cool, dry place. And the temperature ideally should be around 40 to 45. And for most people, that's the most difficult part. Where do you find that 40 to 45 degree location? But that's what you're looking for. And amazingly, they will survive in that paper bag. And then in early March, I would remove them from storage and then basically prune them back. And the outer portions will die. And that outer portion will turn kind of blackish. Cut it back to live green tissue, pot it up, and you'll have a green growing plant in a few weeks.
All right. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Kathleen Dellett, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome, Charity.
Iowa State University Extension organic specialist Kathleen Dellett. And the 15th Annual Iowa Organic Conference is coming up November 22nd and 23rd, a joint project between Iowa State University and the University of Iowa. And we will actually find out more from some of the people who are coming for that conference in a couple of weeks on Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.